And now, it's time for the Dad Bod Rap Pod with your hosts, Damone Carter, David Ma, and Nate LeBlanc.
Three underground rap nerds walked into a bar. An argument ensued about who the GOATs are. The seed was a thought that would turn into a pod. Now fans worldwide say, not a bad job, the ad hoc cab squad who chronicles the vanguard of hip-hop at large. Rap taste slacked off, don't need to be mad, dog. Look no further, it's the Dad Bod Rap Pod.
Podcasting live from San Jose, California. Damone Carter is on assignment. I am your co-host, Nathaniel LeBlanc. I'm here with my man, my mellow, David Ma. How's it going?
Hey, my dude. Good to be here with you. It's been a minute. Shout out to Damone, who's traveling right now, I believe, in Canada.
Yeah. I hope he is having poutine and saying A and apologizing for things.
Shout out to with Tom Horton.
Tim Horton. Tim Horton.
Yeah.
featuring Tim Horton and Kate It's Weapon. What's it called? Yeah, it doesn't happen so often anymore, but a couple of years ago we did a Cadence Weapon interview, and we did like two segments on Canadian hip hop, and we right. got a bunch of new listeners to the show, like new people like came into our orbit because of that. And I'm like, I didn't know talking about Choclair and Socrates 12 inches that I literally did not buy in 1997 could win the show so many new fans. But we appreciate our friends in the frozen tundra and even the nice parts of Canada. And Damone will be back next week. But for now, it's just me and Dave. We're hanging out. We've got an interview this week with rapper Nah Really and producer The Expert. They did this album Blip that you're going to hear all about in a couple of minutes. But before we get to that, Dave, because I have the chance to back you into a corner here when everyone's listening, what have you been listening to lately?
Oh, man. I am so bad when I'm put on the spot like that.
I know. And but just so everyone knows, Dave has the Yellow Magic Orchestra sweatshirt on today. Super dope sweatshirt.
You know, it's kind of funny. I'm working on a book project right now, and I might as well kind of talk about it. It's Dustin Groove's Volume 2, which is based basically about just the universality of record collecting and sort of the culture behind it. And we talk to all kinds of people. But I'm doing a piece on Quantic, who I've spoken to before. I was a big fan of his collaboration with Alice Russell from back in the day. But as a result of doing this this piece on him for this book, I've been going through his work, and you know, he's pretty fucking prolific.
Yeah.
And so I've been listening to a lot of his stuff.
That's awesome. My understanding is he's British, right?
Yeah, British dude, but like very just sort of worldly. Lived in Colombia forever on a sort of
that's what I was gonna say. Like he was started doing like kind of like breakbeaty producery stuff, and then all of a sudden everything was Colombian.
Yes, totally.
That's my
totally.
Take from the outside.
Yeah. I mean, he always sort of had like a South American touch to his music, but his first album, I think it was called Fifth Dimension or something like that. It's just very reminiscent of, you know, not unlike Ninja Tune from like the late 90s, sort of down tempo, but with live drums and cool samples.
Yeah. Did you ever have anything by that band Up, Bustle and Out? They seemed like the it was like kind of like acid jazz, like early Ninja Tune, like Cold Cut, them, Funky Porcini were some of the early acts of the thing, and they always have like a Latin touch to their stuff. Like, so I think that's been in like the beat making ethos for many years. I have like that, like every Ninja Tune thing would have like one of their tracks on a compilation, and I'm like, where's this like trumpet coming from? Like, oh, that sounds
right.
Like, you know, that song by Love, Alone Again, or where it has like the mariachi trumpet out of nowhere.
No, yeah,
just
yeah.
Like what?
That's yeah, dope. So
Quantic is not a name I've heard in a minute, but he's like a super deep collector, right?
Super deep collector. Like I mean, within like the collecting community, like he's sort of known for not just records but collecting vintage gear as well. And a lot of people sort of seek out his engineering prowess, and he apparently he learned a lot of old school techniques when he was on his self-imposed vision quest in South America. So yeah, very interesting dude. So as a result, I've just been going through his catalog, and he has so many different monikers and so many collaboration projects, but there's a lot of really cool stuff. So I've been really enjoying getting into him again recently.
Nice. I think the last time I checked for him, he was in his Quantic Soul Orchestra phase,
right,
and that was
right.
quite a while ago. But I think that was him like hiring live musicians to kind of beef up the sound and make more like original stuff rather than just sampling everything.
Yeah, totally. Actually, like, he kind of abandoned sampling after his early stuff. So pretty much everything you've heard, and a lot of his songs, it's like, oh, here's another 9-minute opus. And usually I'm rolling my eyes already.
Yeah.
But they're excellent. And most of them are original compositions. So that's really cool, too.
That's dope, man.
But just a quick shout out, since we're going to kind of alley-oop into your project, your liner note project, I've been listening to the new Count Bass D. I don't know if you had... I think it's called Topic is the name.
I didn't know there was a new Count Bass D. That's awesome.
It's fucking hilarious, dude. You should check it out. And it's kind of weird and what you would expect from him. Kind of sounds bedroom made, but like quirky and just dripping with his voice. So hopefully we'll get him on the program again. It's really good to hear from him.
Nice. Yeah, it was so dope having him on. We had him on in 2020 for his CBD album.
Right.
Is this something that has come out yet? The one you're listening to?
I believe so. Yeah.
Is
I don't know.
He has an album called Walter Dwight from 2023 and an album called All Due Respect from 2022. Is it either of those?
Oh, really? I think Walter Dwight.
Okay.
Yeah, Walter Dwight.
Cool. I'll check it out. Yeah, he was so cool to talk to, man. Like, that was a great interview, as I recall.
Yeah. No, he's such a good guy, and his whole history with Doom, it's fascinating, you know? And
yeah,
it's really cool
totally.
To see him. We were able to talk to him, and he was great, man.
Yeah, and he's just one of those cats who can do it all. He raps, he produces, he does the art, he just does everything, so...
Right.
That's super awesome. I have to admit, I have not thought about that name in a while. I did listen to that CBD album pretty hard when it came out, and we had just interviewed him for the pod. So that's super awesome. Yeah, thanks for bringing
up. What have you been listening to, man?
I found this new EP that I was super into over the weekend. It came out on Friday. Let me find it real quick. It's called Dear World. And it's by this producer named Sagun, Sagun, and this rapper named Ock the Savior. I'll put it in the group chat. It's featuring Pink Sifu and Mick Jenkins. And I think Ock the Savior, or AK the Savior, I'm not sure if I'm saying that right. It's always so confusing when you read something on the internet with no context, is from that group, the Underachievers.
Okay.
So I've been really enjoying that. I ran that multiple times over the weekend. But other than that, it's actually funny. You brought up the Dustin Groves book. You invited me to write and edit a couple of things, interview
yes.
a couple people for that, which thank you for that. And I'm looking forward to being part of the book when it gets out in the world, hopefully late this year, early next year, maybe.
Yeah.
And so I interviewed these dudes who run archival and reissue labels that I love. So
yeah.
For like 3 months, I was just listening to shit they put out. Like,
oof,
I was like reading all their liner notes and like, you know, listening to just like, I was like, oh yeah, they produced this record. Let me just check that record out. And some stuff I loved and some stuff I didn't, but it's cool. Cause you and I, you know, when we were becoming really close friends, we were really deep into this reissue game and like all
right.
these old historical releases, especially
right.
on Numero and now again, and the big labels like that. And I, especially doing the podcast, I've kind of drifted away from that. I'm listening to more new music and more rap again. So
right.
it was cool to like, it's nice when the records are already on the shelf. You know what I mean? It's
yeah,
like, I could just
totally.
Go and pull them.
Totally.
So I was listening to a ton of, like, yeah, especially the Numero Group Eccentric Soul compilations, which some
yeah.
of them I love. And some of, for a time, I was just like buying them blind. I didn't need to know anything about it. I was just like,
right.
if they have a new one, I'm getting it. But
that's
I didn't always
are,
like
yeah.
absorb them all the way. So it was kind of like new to me. You know what I mean?
Nice. Yeah, I'm very glad that you got a couple of the more standout labels and features in the book. So I'm really excited to unleash this for the world. For Record Store Day, they're going to unveil the cover, and it looks really cool, man. So I'm really excited.
That's awesome. And that's coming right up in April, which it may be April by the time you're hearing this. So who can keep track? but yeah, we have an awesome interview this week. This is one that I did solo. Na Really is an artist who I got put on to a couple of years ago. He actually DM'd me on Twitter and sent me his album, which I used to be on. This all sounds so weird to say now because I'm not on Twitter anymore. And it's like a burning hellscape, but you can use it to forge interesting connections with cool people. And that's something that happened. And then I just kept up with him as he kind of put out a couple more records, and I liked him. I like his writing style a lot. And then he connected with an Irish producer named The Expert, who has put out a bunch of cool records, including one with Stick Figa, one with Germicide. And he's got an instrumental release that I'm really fond of as well. So they connected and made a record, and they asked me to do the liner notes for it. And so that's what we're going to get into in this next segment. So this is Na Really and The Expert talking about their album, Blip, Dad Bod Rap Pod. Dad Bod Rap Pod. Every week we bring you conversations with people moving and shaping the world of hip hop. This week is no different. We have Na Really and The Expert, two collaborators who have just created an album that I'm super into called Blip. And we are going to get into every single detail about it. But first of all, guys, hello. Welcome to the program. How you doing?
Doing well. Yeah, thank you for having us. Really excited to be on.
Yeah, we have gotten to know each other a little bit online. We have exchanged DMs and emails over the years, and I appreciate your guys' support of the show over time. And let's talk about this album, but first let's talk about how you guys became acquainted with each other. Like, Mike, why don't you kick us off? How did you guys meet, and how did you guys decide to collaborate?
Yeah, so Kian reached out, or The Expert reached out to me. I do that every interview. I have to do that once. So The Expert reached out to me. The Expert reached out to me around the end of 2021, 2022, and he enjoyed my 2021 project, Loose Around the Edges, and kind of just, you know, said, thanks for putting out the work into the world. Would love to send you some beats at some point. And what was initially decided was, I'm going to send you one beat for this. Okay. On a compilation producer album I'm working on. And I loved what he sent me. I wrote something really fast, sent it back. I thought it was really good. He thought it was really good. So the conversation kind of turned to him saying, hey, why don't we maybe think about doing a little more? And it was funny. At that time, I was pretty into my self-produced bag. I didn't want to lose momentum. Like, you know, I got my own beats. I'm doing my own thing right now. And he sent me a second pack of beats. And I was like, I need to work with this dude. So we kind of got started from there.
Yeah. So Kian, from your perspective, what did you hear in Loose Around the Edges that interested you?
I think just a really unique voice. I think he has a different skill set than a lot of rappers out there. Because he talks about kind of very everyday things in a humorous manner. And it's also quite simplified, not shrouded in, I suppose, lyrical miracle, and or hard to decipher, to kind of re-listen to it tons of times to understand it. And I was really drawn towards that. And I thought that because he talked about his kind of the jazzy beats, they were kind of four bar loops, which is absolutely cool. But I thought there's something there that I could help elevate what he's doing and kind of bring him to a different lane that might interest a wider audience.
Yeah. I hope that this record does find a huge audience. I'm a big fan of the record. Full disclosure, I wrote the liner notes. Thank you guys for inviting me to do that. And thanks to Danny at Rucksack for coordinating everything. I understand that the album is dropping imminently. So not really. Is this your first time on Wax?
First time.
That's crazy. No old singles floating around. This is literally the first project you get to hold in your hands, or
one shout out to Spectacular Diagnostics. There's one track on that, but this is the first time it's all me. And you know, the first time having a physical copy since we, you know, burned CDs in high school with our nascent rap group.
For sure. That's amazing. I love that as a story. Let's talk a little bit about how you guys began to approach the record. Like, I understand it came from this initial pack of beats. Kian, one thing I love about your production is we share an interest in psychedelic music of all different eras. You, getting to talk to you throughout the process a little bit, I understand a little bit more about how you, this is not a word, psychedelicize things that are not necessarily beginning that way. But can you talk a little bit about your production techniques and how you approached making this album sound big?
Yeah, sure. So yeah, big, just record fan in general, kind of worked in a record, in Tao Records for like 5 years and rinsed the A to Z of most of the sections. So I was able to kind of find out what I liked. And psychedelia was something that really stood out to me. I suppose interest in arrangements, kind of the song structures are all really crazy. Lots of great drum breaks and those records, lots of kind of fuzz guitars, great effects, kind of, and like strings and things like that. And I just thought it's a wonderful palette to be able to bring someone into and really interest in changes can be made. So when I started working on Blip, I would have checked out all Naz's previous work and I kind of had an idea of what tones and sounds might work for him. So I kind of started putting sounds and loops on sides for him and kind of building those batches up and up, and would have made like about 100 little ideas for bar loops either on my MPC or on a laptop, and kind of chip away at them until I thought I had a really good strong batch. And then I'd send Nas some ideas, maybe kind of just skeletons of tracks, let him come back to me, see which ones he liked, and we'd flesh them out, we'd bounce back and forth ideas. It was very collaborative. And then I suppose once I knew we were going with one of the ideas, that's when I'd kind of really delve into the production of the effects and the psychedelicizing of the sounds, as you said. But I would kind of lean towards sounds from the 60s and then kind of old synths from that era to make sure it all kind of sounds as one. So people maybe don't know what the sample is or what it is, and kind of just make it as cohesive across the whole record as I could.
Yeah, and I think that definitely comes through in the finished product. Where do you stand on, like, do you listen to old 60s rock music? Is this a palette you were familiar with? Was it something that drew you in immediately? Like, how did you feel when you kind of, I know there was some post-production, but when you first got these and you were like, oh, this is what he's given me. What did you think initially?
To me, a dope beat is a dope beat. I listen to a wide range of music for sure. I don't think I have quite an encyclopedic knowledge of like, you know, 60s psychedelic sounds, but to me, all I need is to want to start writing and rapping. And so that could be anything. You know, it just so happened my own self-produced stuff I did was jazzy, but that's just what I knew how to make beats for.
Right.
So I can, you know, I'm happy to look. I don't have any preconceived notions about what makes a good beat or what doesn't. But also, you know, someone like Edon, something like that Homeboy Sandman and Edon project, Humble Pie a while back, I love that, right? Yeah. I think Quelle Chris kind of can get a little psychedelic too. I do gravitate toward it as a listener, but as a rapper, I can get down with anything.
Yeah, that's awesome. We never really addressed this, and I didn't get into this in the notes that I wrote for the record, but like, I guess let's talk about being a blip, or what blip is. It's not the Marvel version of the people who disappeared for 5 years and their blip. It's like, I think if I understand it correctly, and I was just re-listening to the album kind of tidying up around here while I was, I knew I was going to talk to you guys in an hour or whatever. And I think it's like, it's about feeling small amid the massiveness of what's around us. Can you talk a little bit about like how you arrived at that as a title, as a theme, like how that is carried through in the project, how just like the general kind of humanity's small place in this massive cosmos?
Yeah, you're totally right. It's sort of a blip on the radar, being small, something small amid something large. And just at a functional, practical level, when we were looking for a title, we were just culling songs, looking for lyrics. And we found that word blip in the song Movement and Light with Hemlock Ernst. And we had a few other ideas that were sort of circling this idea of feeling small, being an individual amid this massive universe or, you know, multiple universes. It also kind of had a technological feel, and there's a theme of technology at times throughout the album. I find it to be pretty heavy, but you know, it depends on who's listening. So once we found that word, and we kind of had a hard time picking a title, but once we zeroed in on that, there was something about just the quickness of it. Blip, right? It looks great in all caps, but it also fit that thing of feeling small, of walking around in your daily life and having all of these problems and foibles and issues and things that you go through at the same, but at the same time, you're just a blip in the grand scheme.
Yeah. And I think also the kind of the minutiae of maybe some of the stuff Matt talks about, I think it kind of really fit that kind of small, but also grandiose, kind of bring it all together and feeling for the record. And we also thought it gave us a wide range to work on the artwork as well, which was the pain point of the record, but the rest was great.
That's interesting to hear. Kian, you have a kind of Beatles day in the life, media swirling all around us collage thing on the track All at Once. And like, I don't think I'm going to talk to George Martin anytime soon. So I'm going to talk to you about it. Like, how does one make something like that? Is it as time consuming as you would think it would be? Do you just record TV sometimes so you have things to work with? Like, how does one create something like that?
We begin top story tonight with that bombshell announcement.
Now there are nearly 9.5
million
estimated that 80% of the nation is now nearly humanitarian.
Cambridge Analytica, it was this Facebook
feed. Yeah, authorities say at least 15 people have died after
a helicopter was captured on body camera footage. We want to warn you, the video is disturbing.
So, well, first of all, kudos on the exactly nailing that, because it was a day of the life, was exactly what kind of that track was based around. So in that song, McCartney and Lennon have two different sides of like kind of what's going on in their daily lives and newspapers, and that's what that song's about, that kind of all the craziness in the world. Is it crazier than it ever was, or is it just the same and we've accessed the phones? And I suppose the original song was just written over the first kind of section, and I kind of went back to Nan and kind of had that epiphany that, well, I really think this could be a two-parter and could really bring people on a journey. But because we didn't have a hook, we didn't really know how to bridge the gap. So I kind of said to him the idea, well, what about if we kind of bring that cacophony of everyday life, of the media bombarding us with messages and about devastation, I suppose, and fear, especially during COVID time, I think we all really felt that. So I spent an awful lot of time trawling through tons and tons and tons of news clips and radio clips, not only just to find what they were actually saying, but I suppose the sound of the voices and kind of the panic that I would kind of gave. So it originally, that middle section was probably about a minute long. And then after listening to it over and over again, it's just like, this is just way too much. We need to cut this way down. So I think it's about 20 seconds now. But that, I knew if we could get into that kind of mad, weird, psychedelicized section of all the voices at once, it would allow us to bridge into a brand new section that I very much wanted to add weight to his final verse, like a kind of a somber piano, which kind of then fades into some lovely strings outro to kind of bring some poignancy to the record. I think it's the most serious part of the record. It's the end of side one, and we just wanted to, I suppose, give people time to sit and reflect about, I suppose, a pretty serious but thoughtful situation that's going on in the world today. And I actually think that song's gained more weight over the last 6 months with all the craziness going on. So
yeah,
it's I think we feel it's the centerpiece of the record, and yeah, we're really proud of that one.
Yeah, great song, and thank you for walking me through that. I've been a big fan of your writing since I think you first sent me Loose Around the Edges. That was when I kind of got on board. But like, why don't you, like, as if this was your introductory press conference to the world, like the number one draft pick, like, where do you come from as a rapper? Who do you appreciate? What did you base your writing on? How'd you get your start in the game? Like, feel free to kind of expansively tell us who are you as a rapper?
I'm from the great state of Massachusetts, I have to say. But I moved to New York City area in 2015 and started hitting open mics. I had been rapping forever before that, from high school on and off. But it got to a point when I was sort of in my mid-20s. I said to myself, if this keeps coming up in your head and you don't follow it, you're going to regret it. So I started hitting open mics, started releasing music regularly. And I kind of had a series of tapes called Tape Through Tape 5. And that was when I was kind of learning what I would be as an MC, what I would write about, writing style. And that kind of led up to these two self-produced albums that I have, Loose Around the Edges and Hacking Away. And I think that's when I kind of found my sound. So in that era, it was kind of spitting bars, you know, a little humorous, levity. But there were moments when I was writing in a more concerted, conceptual way that I think ended up being what we did on this particular album. So it's been it was an interesting thing. So I kind of, you know, I'm a 90s hip hop head, you know, came to it when I was a teenager. Wu-Tang, Big L, Dos FX, Nas, you know, you can name them all. And that's what informed my start. That's probably what informed my taste. I love a jazzy instrumental. I love something I can flow over. And what's been interesting, though, is I finally established what my sound was as this sort of free-flowing, free-associative, yet maybe overly specific bars. Then when the expert and I got together, I got to experiment with a new style. Mm. So the kernel of this sort of conceptual writing existed in my old work, but it was very different. And I think it's cool to have identified one mode. That's the not really left to his own devices mode. Sorry to talk in the third person. And the other mode, the not really in the expert mode of going bigger. You know, it's exciting to be able to flex my ability to write in a clear and digestible way about stuff while also having someone to bounce those ideas off of. So whether that answered the question or not, I'm not sure, but it's been a long run.
Yeah, definitely. Great, great answer. And Kian, kind of for your history, I'm very, as the listeners can probably tell from your amazing accent, you're from Ireland, you're from Dublin, I believe, right?
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about what it was like coming up as a hip hop head in a place where it's not necessarily known for creating, you know, the hardest music or whatever? Like, just give us a little insight into how you grew up and how you did you have to wait for things to get there? Like, I really don't understand. So please just also be expansive. Tell us a story. Like, how did you come to be such a great producer coming from somewhere where there's not a ton of hip hop around you?
Yeah. So I suppose when I was growing up, kind of the first, I wasn't that into music. To be honest, down, I heard Criss Cross, Jump, you know, that was kind of like one of the big songs that I like, but it wasn't until...
Turned your pants around and just started a whole new life.
This is it. But I think, I suppose it wasn't really until kind of House of Pain, Chronic, Doggy Style, Warren G. They were the first kind of albums, I think, that me and my friends of the time, it was definitely... It kind of reached our ears as maybe as much for the profanity as the kind of excitement of the whole thing. But then I remember one day when a friend of mine brought over the Wu-Tang tape and like literally stopped me in my tracks, blew my mind. And I kind of was like, I got to do this. I got to kind of make this stuff. So got kind of some 1210s, got a kind of shitty little mixer that had like 5 second sample time or whatever, tried to do like a one bar drum loop with some sounds on it, and then kind of got another an Akai sampler, which is a bit better. But then I got an MPC finally when I was around 16 or 17, and I suppose it was a bit later, 19, Pro Tools kind of kicked in, and I started using that. But kind of growing up in Ireland in that time, like, you were an utter freak, like, if you liked hip-hop, it was like, what is this, you know? I suppose Fugees in 96 opened up Ireland's eyes a bit or whatever. I suppose, okay, it was Diamond or whatever, was huge.
Yeah.
And then, of course, not only in Ireland, but worldwide, I think Eminem, absolutely. Like, then it wasn't so much like, oh, that's what you listen to, whatever. But I suppose, like, what Eminem was a part of my palate, but I was, you know, I suppose I was digging into Raucous Records or whatever at that time. Do you know what I mean?
Very much so, know what you mean, yes. Yeah. Same here. It sounds pretty similar, honestly.
Yeah, so it definitely was like a small friend, like, they're all my close friends, and still to this day are the people who we kind of found hip hop together, and we were definitely outsiders. But then when I was 19, I kind of met up with some other Irish heads in Dublin, and it was honestly how it happened was a pirate radio station, and it was like basically all the heads who loved it so much that were either rapping, DJing, or producing, all just started meeting up on Saturdays in the city centre. And from that, I asked one of the rappers and DJs to set up a crew. So I released my first vinyl in like 2001. So I've been doing this quite a while. And I was very lucky because I was in a small pond. I got to play with Gangstar, Aesop Rock, LP, J. Rue,
as the opener when they would come through Dublin.
Exactly. De La Soul, Public Enemy, Gang, so, yeah, so Black Alicious or whatever. So I got to actually meet all the people we listened to. So that was kind of wild. And then we kind of kept on making records for a while, and just kind of petered out because, I suppose, adulthood kicked in, I suppose, if you want to call it that, or like, we, you know. But then I just absolutely still loved the music and wanted to keep on making it, so I kept on producing. Then a couple of years ago, I made a record with Germicide from the Legendary Crew, you know, Tanya Morgan and Elucid and stuff. And then last year, I made a record with Stick Figure called Ritual that I'm really proud of. And then that's, we start working then at the exact same time, really, actually, start working with now, really. And that's where we are now. But yeah, that kind of the psychedelic version of The Expert, if you want to call it like that, really happened with my the overview effect of Germicide, then with Ritual, and then with Blip.
Yeah, right on. That's so cool. So let's talk a little bit about some of the guests that you guys have. In particular, when I was just re-listening, the Hemlock Ernst feature, if you will, is like seamless. It seems like he's meant to be there. How much direction did that take, or did you just send it over and that's what came back and you're like, holy shit, like, now he's singing the hook and he's just like perfectly intricately interweaving in things that have already been mentioned. I think it's seamless. Like, how did that come about?
Yeah, I feel small from the sidewalk. My life shrinks, zooming out from my block to my neighborhood, city, state, country, continent, and planet. I'm just a blip trying to manage my little tiny life. Seems to me to be of a certain size, but if you walk by my window at night, it's just movement and light. My little tiny life seems to me to be of a certain size, but if you walk by my window at night, it's just movement and light.
The walls know all, the windows hear, the gargoyles sneer, the gutters strain, where the air vents choking, gasps, steam rising from the windows crack, the building chain smoking laughs at the elevator's tricks, the radiators click, the cobwebs drift, to the corners are swept finally, where mourners slept, and widowed eyes wept silently.
So at the start of the project, me and Nah kind of put down a kind of wish list of people we'd like to get on the record, and Nas' first choice was Open Mike Eagle, and mine was Hemlock Ernst. And the reason being, I just thought I couldn't help but hear their two voices together. I thought they'd be a great fit together. So, once we both said, yeah, you know, that sounds great, how we make it happen, I suppose, was the next piece. But we started chipping away at tracks, and that beat in particular was very much made with him in mind. I'd heard him over the Kenny Siegel stuff, and I just thought he's really great on this kind of, I suppose, melodic, you know, light but interesting beats. And we had the beat. I thought his voice was going to sound perfect on it. And Nah wrote the verse, and then shout out to Tommy Controller 7. He gave us the kind of hookup because he worked with him before, and sent it over to him, and he was really great. Like a good few emails back and forth, and he kind of just said, I have an idea that's going to fit it, whatever. And I said, brilliant. Could you also double up on the hook so we could kind of interweave it and use it? And it was really seamless and kind of exactly what we'd kind of hoped for in the kernel of the idea, and it came to fruition. So we were delighted.
It's funny though, because I've never had a feature on anything before. This is the first time I've ever done this. And when the expert was like, yeah, I hear Hemlock Ernst on this beat, I hadn't written a word, a syllable.
Oh, interesting.
Better to. I was like, dude, okay, well, cool. Yeah. Okay. That's great to know. But you know, the song came together, and it's funny, that concept has been a concept I've been trying to write since probably 2017.
Oh, fascinating.
And it came together. And, you know, when we reached out, yeah, he just spoke back the concept and then came with just, yeah, it's, he's just so, so creative. And it was funny because the expert has, you know, been through this, getting features back, things like that. And I think this was the first one we got back. And I remember I was walking to go get a bagel some Saturday morning. And he said, the features in your inbox, make sure you just, you know, you're ready to listen to it. You know, this can be a strange experience. So I made sure I got my bagel already, didn't listen to it on the walk, sat down with the bagel and listened to it. I could have choked to death. I was blown away. It was amazing. It was
Cool, man. I don't think there's a podcasting equivalent, so I don't know if I truly know how you feel, but like to hear your creation then enhanced by someone you respect must be a really dope feeling. And I can only imagine it's crushing when it doesn't work. And I'm sure there are scrapped collaborations in everyone's closet where you're like, they didn't quite get it. Like, and that's gotta be a tough feeling too, because then you gotta have a conversation, or maybe you just ghost. I don't know how that works, but if we sit down and interview someone for 40 minutes or whatever, we use it. So that's super cool. Let's talk a little bit about the OME feature. Again, full disclosure, I was the plug on that one. I did help connect you guys with Mike, who we know from podcasting. Yeah, super glad to do that. Super glad to connect cool people who I like with each other. That's like something that I'm always happy to do. So that was awesome. And the fact you guys came with budget and promptness, and you know, like it's so much easier when you're not begging, and you know, it's just you're very professional, and it all went great. So talk about that song a little bit. I know you released it as one of those are the two singles, right? Am I tripping?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So, why don't you take this one? Like, how do you feel about what Mike came through with? And, you know, like, just where did that one come from?
Said I'm breaking down in real time, it's hard to ignore. But the dying is the living, and it's what I'm here for. Yo, the weight of existence is the price of admission. The bitter result of a taste so delicious.
There are also highlights. My baby boy is almost my height. I saw Where's Waldo in Highlights magazine. I'd like to thank the Academy. I should have made more people mad at me. I trained in 1.5 times gravity.
Yeah, so he was my number one pick. 2022 was coming to a close. A tape called Component System with the Auto Reverse came out. And that, I don't know if it's my favorite of his, but there was just something about that album that left it on repeat for a remarkably long time.
Yeah.
And so, just super good. I finally got it on vinyl. And so he was number one. He loomed large in my mind at that moment. And you know, we got in touch. Well, you know what? The first thing was we got the right song. So that mm-hmm. song felt like a fit for him. And, you know, I wouldn't want to shoehorn someone to get a big name or get a favorite. It meant a lot to me that he was willing and gave us a really great verse, but I wouldn't want to just be doing it just to do it. So we found the fit. He was very quick, like insanely quick. Dude is a pro's pro. And what he brought back was so fascinating to me, because Breaking Down in Real Time is about the experience of noticing your body getting shittier.
I don't know what you're talking about. That's something I can't relate to at all. No,
but you know, finding sort of a strange beauty in it, right? And I am in my early 30s. And I think what Mike gave back, almost, you know, it expanded upon, but also sort of responded to what I said. And I did not expect that at all. You know, he's a little older than me, a lot wiser than me, probably. And so it was interesting to get that slightly different perspective, kind of dancing around the same topic, right? So, you know, we talk about the Hemlock Ernst feature being an extension of the topic, bringing it to new heights, whereas the Open Mike Eagle one was almost the other side of the same coin. And hearing that back, at first it was like, oh, he's kind of spitting bars, but then you listen along and there are all these touchstones that are so, you know, perfectly fit within the song. So it's interesting to hit someone with something conceptual. They hit you with something back that's a little less conceptual, but then when you scratch beneath that surface just a little bit, it's all there. And, you know, who could do that better than Open Mike Eagle? So, you know, we were pumped when we got that back. And it's a unique approach to a feature in my mind.
That's awesome. And there is one cat on the record who I'm not familiar with, and that's Dylan. Who is Dylan?
Dylan is an indie hip hop legend. Dylan Indeed. Runs a label called Full Plate. He's based in Atlanta from Jacksonville. I know him in a really random way. I'll remain vague about, but he is a beast. He is an amazing writer. He's a great producer, amazing performer, has some very unique performances. So yeah, Dylan, you know, with Dylan, when it's some hip hop legend's birthday and you look on his Instagram, he's got a picture with them. So he's the man. Jeff, definitely check out Dylan. Had an album with Diamond D last year.
And it's just so you know, Nate, he released the last Edan 7-inch with Peyton Locke, and he released the last Peyton Locke album, which was Edan's sidekick when he played live.
Right.
Yeah, it's incredible. AmeriCancer. Yeah,
shout out to Dylan. Oh, he released the AmeriCancer. Okay. Yeah. I need to get up to speed. That's awesome. I'm glad you said something that made me think of this, and I'm not remembering the segue because I'm also writing down all this stuff I need to look up now. But Mike, I want to talk about the Rap Hand song. Like, I love this song so much. I've never actually heard a song about this, but I've been to so many indie hip hop shows. As you can imagine, it's a topic that must be addressed. Like, you very kind of like self-effacingly talk about your struggles with not knowing what to do with your hands, which has been the very few times we've allowed ourselves to be photographed as the podcast. We're always like stuffing our hands in our pockets and we never know what to do with them. It's just so intensely relatable. Like, can you just talk about that song and like your journey with like kind of accepting that it's weird with the hand you don't hold the mic with, essentially?
They have a mind of their own. This I know.
Rapper hands.
Practice them at home, but I won't.
Rapper hands. Yo, I learned mic cuffing as a golden mean, and to move the thing away if I'm about to scream. To ask the sound man to turn it up nicely and thank him after, cause we live in a society. By that point, enough RAM had freed up on stage that I could start considering other stuff. So I focused on the arm and got that to stop moving. Unfortunately, in the pursuit of improvement, I overshot the landing, stiff as a board. I bet I came across prickish and bored.
Yeah, that one is, you know, one funny side note before we go. That hook is extra silly. And I think the expert, I think how the expert pulled me to think bigger, write bigger. I think I pulled him to be accept a little silliness. So right. I think sure. that song yeah. is the exact example of that. Yeah. But yeah, I started rapping in 2015 and I was a nervous wreck up there. And I just had to take things one thing at a time. I had to learn how to hold the mic correctly. I had to learn how to be interesting, I suppose, when I'm performing. And at one point I saw a video of myself and the person who filmed it was like, "What's going on with your hands there?" And I thought, "Oh my God, that is horrible." And I tried to address it and I just wasn't there yet, right? So there's this, one of the lines is like, by that point, enough RAM had freed up on stage that I could start considering other stuff. There was a moment where I was comfortable enough on stage with everything else that mattered about rapping that I could finally start to think about what my hand was doing. Yeah. And so it's, you know, it's about that quite literally, but it's also about, you know, the process of becoming an artist and developing and getting better at things. And the fact that, you know, that development's not always going to be linear and it's going to be embarrassing. But then also on the flip side, I'm still not there, right? Sometimes I'll see a video. I'm like, I do this one move. I know this is a podcast. I'm holding like my thumb and four fingers together and like lifting it up. I do that move now. And it is a total mystery to me. And yet I don't think it looks too bad. So I'm just rolling with it. So, you know, the song ends with like my rapper hands and I merely coexist. And
yeah,
and that's where I'm at with it.
That's
save that one for the second album.
Kian, what's your current vinyl habit like? Are you still hitting the shops regularly? Are you more online just buying things you've had your eye on and watch lists? Like, how are you acquiring raw materials these days?
Yeah, so vinyl, I'm not gonna lie, I don't purchase as much as I do and as I used to, and because I probably have over 3,000 records. Actually, I know it wasn't that much, but in a house that, trust me, it takes up a lot of space. As
yeah, you my office is upstairs, so the movers fucking hated me.
So yeah, mine are kind of scattered around the house, but like, I definitely still buy records and like, but probably more so now it's records I know I'm going to listen to all the time, sure. if that makes sense. So yeah.
Not just one hot second.
Yeah. You know, so it's definitely for records I'm going to buy all the time. But the one thing I will do if I ever go outside Dublin to either other countries or other places, I definitely will kind of go in with a anything's up for grabs type of deal. And whether that's something I've wanted for a long time or something like in the dollar bin or whatever that I know something looks crazy, I'll be like, yeah, I'll take that back. So it's normally I buy in bulk now, but it's not as often as it used to be. Because to be honest, I'm still finding stuff on bits I have, because you know, at one stage of your beat making, you're kind of looking for a certain sound or making chopping a certain way, then the kind of the evolution of hip hop changes and you kind of do it in the, you know, you're looking for you know, a different sound, or and you kind of things you skimmed over a decade ago, you're looking at them now going, oh my God, like why did I lose that 10 years? That is exactly what I'm looking for now. So I do think there's an element of serendipity when you listen to things and you find them that time around. So it's like, that's what I'm looking for right now. So yeah, I have a kind of a big stack of sampling stuff I use, where that's library records or just kind of weird 60s stuff that I always find bits and bobs from.
Nice. It's one of the many myths, or I don't even know if it's a myth or if it's just like legend. One of the legends of Dilla is that one of the main ways he had a leg up on everyone else is he didn't needle drop. He would actually just sit there and listen to the whole record. Absolutely. So you expose yourself to like terrible bullshit constantly for these little gems that you can find in between, and that's why he selected things other people didn't. And I
I bought a lot of records that had cool samples on them, but I've literally never made a beat. So I've had to reckon with that lately. And I was like, yeah, I think it's time to let this go. Like, this should go to another home. Like, I'm never going to do this. So, like, why is this stuck on my shelf? I should only have records I actually want to listen to. But for many years, it was like, does this have a break? Does this have a sample? And then I would, like, give it to someone. I don't know what I was intending to do with those, but a lot of money and a lot of time.
So why would we just take any record? I'm all blur here. So I would take any record, listen to it all the way front and back, and use like yellow stickies and say, like, side one, you know, second verse, strings descending or whatever, and like that's what it, and I kind of have like a system that that's how I'll get like my loops or little bits, because sometimes I actually, it's the little noises that I kind of find myself wanting to find again, because loops are kind of stand out to a lot of people, or you know, you might find that, but it's the additional layers that, you know, like a large pro Pete Rock or even the modern, like Blockhead might use. It's that kind of, it's those additional bits that I'm looking for more of them to build up the layer. And that's where I find stuff you discarded previously, you can definitely keep on finding.
Yeah, we talked to Preservation a couple weeks ago about his new album with Crime Apple. And it came out in the interview that the whole way they decided to name their album was there were lion sounds in the sample he used to begin the record, and I was just like, no way. And it was just so crazy to hear. It's like, when you were talking about moments of serendipity earlier, I don't think the average listener cares or realizes how much of this is happenstance. Like, it's just, you get so lucky sometimes making music and the creative process. It's just, it's what you set out to do is sometimes different than where you end up. And that's something so beautiful, I think, about this like hip hop culture, and that it's worldwide. There's nothing like holding people back at this point. You could sample off YouTube. You could sample directly into your computer. You don't need outboard equipment. Like, it's just gotten so much more accessible to so many more people. And that allows kind of these long distance collaborations like you guys did, where you made this fucking awesome record that I'm such a huge fan of. Want to let you both plug anything you want. Do you have anything you wanted to say that I didn't ask? Like, why don't we start with you and then go to you, Key, and like the floor is yours.
Yeah, I would say buy Blip. We have vinyl available. I think it's a really good project. I had a really good time making it, and I think it shows in the final product. The Expert is one of the best independent hip hop producers out right now, and I feel blessed to have had the chance to rhyme on these beats. As far as for me, I'm going on my first tour in April, very quick one in the Northeast. So Portland, Maine, Providence, Rhode Island, Boston, Mass, Brooklyn, New York for the Blip release show. So if you're around, pull up. Would love to say hello. First ever Not Really merch is going to happen.
Oh, shit. Let me know. And then, email me, because I'm not on social media.
I will. And and then, you know, just we covered 3 out of the 4 features. Just want to shout out Jesse the Tree.
Yes.
Huge help in that tour. Amazing friend, fellow Celtics fan. Shout out to him. Beyond that, you know, shout out to Rucksack Records. It's been a pleasure working with them. And, you know, shout out to you, Nate, for the help in making this thing happen. And, you know, it took everything in me not to wear my Dad Bod Rap Pod shirt and have the mug out. I was trying to play it cool. So here I am just in a black hoodie. So
yeah, man, appreciate you, you know, messing with the show all this time. And it has been so just heartwarming for me to watch you improve and level up. And I've always been a big fan of your writing, and just to see you taking these steps to get your music in front of more people, and frankly improve as both a writer and an MC and a performer, and to get these different looks and features, and it's really, really rewarding, and it couldn't happen to a nicer person. So I'm just really proud of you, man. I think these couple of years you have just increased in every aspect of your career so much, and I've been able to watch that, and it's just super awesome. And I didn't realize how young you are, and now that offends me. So
I appreciate it.
I thought we were more closer to the same age, but that's okay. It's fine. I'm not mad. Kian, what's on your mind? Do you have anything you want to promote, or go ahead.
Yeah. Like, I suppose a lot of people who are maybe listening to this interview may not know who we are. So I just really would like people to be inquisitive and to listen to Blip and just see what they think. I think it's quite a unique record, both lyrically and production wise, and it's quite an interesting record. So I'd love for people to just check it out first and foremost. Other than that, I suppose it'd be great if people kind of followed our journeys from here on, all my social media, although I'm not great, same as you, Nate, is just It's the Expert, all one word. And yeah, look, I'm chipping away at other projects for the future, so let's see when they come out. But yeah, just that people kind of give us their ears, because I think, in this modern life, it's hard for people to give the time up, and I'd really appreciate if people do that. And then I'd also just like to thank Dad Bod, Rap Pod, and yourself, Nate, for everything you did for just everything you're doing for the culture, to give people an opportunity to present the work they're doing, because the outlets are decreasing.
Yeah, sadly, the media scape is just collapsing in on itself, and it totally sucks. I'll take thank you for saying that, and thank you for doing this. I really do love the record, and was happy to play a small role in promoting it and describing it and contextualizing it. And I want people to listen to your instrumental record, Excursions. That is such a dope record. Any writers out there, whether you're writing verses or journalism or just whatever it is you do in your notebook, that's a great record to write to. And I think The Expert has such a deft touch with kind of more orchestrating things. I don't know if I'm quite using that term correctly, but I feel like I am. There's more going on in an Expert beat than in a normal hip hop beat, if that makes any sense. And I think when you throw this on, it will make sense. And you're a really dope producer, and I've been having fun following your career as well. So guys, everybody, go out, listen to Blip, send thoughts, buy the wax. The whole package is going to be super dope. Shout out to Rucksack Records. And I'm sure we will talk again. Thank you guys for your time.
Cheers. Thanks. Thank you.
So yeah, guys, that was our interview with Not Really and The Expert, or as I probably called them by their real names the whole time, because I hate calling people by their hip hop names, but super dope to catch up with them. They said some very nice things about the show. They're both fans of the show, which is cool. I'm fans of theirs, which is great. And Dave, before we wrap up here, one of the things I really like about Not Really's music is, like, he is a very skilled practitioner of what I call regular guy rap.
Yes.
We have discussed this many times over the years, but I was wondering, like, what is your current feelings on that? Do you have anyone you're listening to now who kind of fits into that role? Like, does that, like, ring any bells for you at the moment?
Yeah, totally. It's funny that you mentioned that, because I just upgraded my YouTube to, like, YouTube Premium, and so now no more commercials. And also, wow, I feel like the algorithm is just the algorithm. I think it does something to the algorithm. It just puts it on steroids.
They're like, actually, listen to what this guy likes. He pays us.
But
sending Joe Rogan clips.
On a strange random tip, all this old Grouch material kept coming up on my stuff, and I kind of checked out on Grouch, and sort of his 2010 stuff I can't really get into, but his early stuff I still like. And it's funny because it is, like, the most everyday every man rap of every man rap, you know.
Totally.
What I mean?
There's a song called maybe one of the OGs in this regular guy rap shit,
right? So Making Perfect Sense, that album, that's the one with Simple Man on there, which is, like, an anthem for everyday every man rap.
Yeah,
you know, I like Pretty Things, I like Beans and Rice, you know, forever rock $28 jeans till the end.
That really dates that song. That's like a $150 pair of jeans now.
Totally. But yeah, I mean, in terms of that genre, like, that's something I will always go back to, because, I mean, who doesn't like relatable content? And sort of in terms of, like, more newer material, I'm really liking the Cyanide stuff. The stuff that he did with D Styles a few months ago, Really, really like that stuff.
Yeah, Jay Cyanide is super dope. And he is one of, if Jay Cyanide, if you're listening, I love that you send us your music. Thank you for sending us your music directly. Super awesome. And it was great having you on the show a little while ago. Basically, I toggle between, like, I only want to listen to things I actually relate to and, like, super heroic feats of lyrical dexterity that I can't imagine. You know what I mean?
Right,
and some people manage to do both at the same time. It's just, it's crazy. Like, a Mike Eagle comes to mind, a Black Thought in some ways comes to mind.
Well, I was going to say, like, how does one even define it? Because, I mean, Billy Woods is everyman rap, but he's so gloriously like literary that I almost feel like it's not normal.
Like everyman rap, if like Hemingway's an everyday writer, you know what I mean? It's just like you've nailed it, you've crystallized it so hard, you cease to be normal. You're just so good at your craft. But he does say very extremely relatable stuff, especially that whole Maps album where he's just kind of describing the weekend that he was at Kenny Siegel's house for making the album. It's just like, yeah, I go to sneaker stores and get mad, and like I go out to eat, and I don't tend to go to recording studios except for ours, which is my bedroom, but you know, or my office, I guess, at this point in my life. But yeah, it's an LP, I think, strikes that balance pretty well. Mm-hmm. It's like sometimes he's, you know, on drugs bemoaning the state of the world, sometimes he's literally a character within his songs, and then sometimes it's just the most intensely relatable thing about like a family issue.
Right. Well, 100%, 100%. I guess the what sort of defines it is how relatable it is, and if that's sort of the undercurrent, I gotta say, like, a Master Ace has been doing this shit for like 30 years.
That's a good call, dude. Yeah. The thing I have thought about Master Ace the most recently is, like, we watched the Biz Markie documentary together. He did that song where he like apologized to Biz Markie for kind of like the misunderstanding that led to the birth of the puppet, that led to the ego trip photo shoots. And like the puppet is like basically a star of that movie, which I've been talking about a ton recently because it's such an odd choice. And like that Master Ace can like make a song out of like some two people walking by while he's sitting on the stoop drinking a juice. It's just like, and it's like a dope ass song, you know what I mean?
Yeah totally. We were I think this is for a different episode, but we were just chatting to DJ D Sharp, and Gift of Gab, Blackalicious, comes to mind as well as sort of a master of the everyday relatable, you know, 40 ounce for breakfast, you know.
Right, 40 ounce for breakfast, relatable. Lyric Fathom, not relatable at all. Never going to be able to rap like that.
Can't fathom, yeah.
Yeah, I can't even fathom it. That's amazing. Dave, you've had to sit through this segment 296 times. Where can people find us on social media?
Oh, my God. If we're being honest, I don't even know the actual... the actual, like, you know, backslash.
How we do this.
Yeah. Come on, dude.
It's at Dadbod Rap Pod on all platforms, I think.
Is it?
Yeah, okay. I'm pretty sure we camped out on that. And then you miraculously saved our website, which I still need to talk to you offline. I don't understand what happened. You paid ransom for our website? Essentially?
They give you what they do is they bombard you with things that sort of like push up your anxiety to buy, to purchase. Mm. But if you trudge through all like all the emails, there's a grace period.
Ah,
and so then
you caught it in the grace period.
Caught it. Hit up that guy directly. It's such a scam. You know, it's like a
shady business, deal. Man.
Yeah. So I just was lucky that, you know, I read the fine print on that, you know, random Tuesday and
I'm glad someone did. I was like, man, we worked hard on that shit.
Totally.
We're never going to get our URL back. But if you guys want and you want to go see what our old ass website looks like, we're going to make a new one someday. But we have dadbodrappod.com. Not a ton of info on there, but old episodes and our old logos and stuff. If you want to revisit the past through the magic of the internet, we're also on Instagram. At Dadbod Rap Pod, Damone is holding that down, and Dave is posting the episode posts these days on Thursdays when they drop, and then we're still on the ghost of Twitter at Dadbod Rap Pod. That's pretty much always Damone. When I was still on there, Dave would parachute in on like national holidays and then post something that got like thousands of likes and then just parachute back out again to his own world. I don't know if that's still going on. Do you ever post on there?
No, I don't. I got a new phone like 8 months ago or something, and Damone tried to give me the new password and it doesn't work. And I'm like, after three tries, I'm not gonna try to get back on Twitter.
Totally. Lock the whole account. Like, is that an uppercase or lowercase? Is that a exclamation point or a one? Who has the time? But anyway, we're very available on the internet. Dadbod Rap Pod, worldwide phenomenon, to the couple of thousand of people who care. So glad to be doing this with my buds. Good to see you, Dave. We also have our Patreon. That's patreon.com/dadbodrappod. We're doing a weekly, we've kept it up for 2 weeks, so at this point I'm semi-comfortable calling it weekly, little wrap-up thing, where we just kind of hang out and get into music and movies and stuff we're talking about. I just had Sean Kantrowitz from The Questions and a bunch of other stuff that Sean does, the creator of The Questions show and game show and podcast and card game from Random House that I'm sure you guys are familiar with, on to talk about some hip-hop documentaries. I make fake radio shows occasionally. Damone makes playlists. Dave sends good vibes.
I'm the partner, dude.
So check out the Patreon. It's $5 a month. There is a free tier to join it. We don't know what you people are doing there. I guess it's nice that you do that, but we use it as a money-making venture. It's one of the few ways that the show can generate revenue. We talked about this a couple episodes ago, and we'll talk about it again briefly. We're going to Vietnam in a couple of months, like in a few short months. That shit is coming right up. We're going in July, so we will have tons of bonus footage. We're taking video cameras with us for the first time. I'm imagining a lot of that stuff will end up on the Patreon. We're going to do confessional videos when Dave is drunk at 3 a.m. Searching for the perfect bun mi, and just see what's up in Vietnam, and talk about, we're lining up all the content for that, but more news to come on that. Is there anything you want to plug, Dave?
Not at the moment. I got a couple things in the works, but I don't want to overspeak until they're sort of, more crystallized, a little bit more finalized.
For sure. As you heard in the interview, buy the Blip album. In it, you can read a little bit of writing from yours truly. And I do think it's a very good record. Otherwise, I wouldn't be doing all of this. It's my third liner notes project. I'm pretty stoked about that. If you want me to write some liner notes for something, you can email me. It's easy enough to find.
Can very much vouch for your work. You're one of not only one of my best friends, but one of the best hired guns in the business.
Thanks, bud. 90% of my work has come through you. This and the Gaja record, which is behind me, are probably the only things I've ever written that had nothing to do with you. So thank you. It means a lot to me. You guys can expect us to put out a podcast pretty much weekly. We will introduce you to rap music and sometimes other kinds of music. We will talk about life. We will try to make you laugh. And we'll bring you that nuanced conversation that DBRP and the rest of the Stony Island family is known for. And that's another episode of the Dadbod Rap Pod. Come back next week. Peace. Why don't you?